It is the Pastor's Heart on a Monday afternoon, and Dominic Steele here, and we're live on Facebook this afternoon. If you'd like to send a question through, our guests today, John Lovell and Simon Gillam. And we're running a day early today because this building, this church building, we're hosting a conference for kids and youth leaders all the rest of the week. So we've been bumped to be a day early this afternoon. Now, the last few years on The Pastor's Heart, we've started our program each year heading up to the Blue Mountains, and the first guest of the year, we've spoken to the keynote speaker at what's called the Church Missionary Society Summer School, the big missionary conference up in the Blue Mountains to the west of Sydney. And, well, I didn't go last week because you couldn't get in. Instead of there being 3,000 guests, there was just 100 there in person because of all the COVID changes and regulations, and then stacks more people watching on the stream. But big changes, lots of stress in the lead up to the conference. I think the conference got changed around, turned around upside down 4 times in the planning organisation. And John Lovell, brand new secretary, brand new general secretary of the Church Missionary Society for New South Wales, and Simon Gillam, former missionary, now head of the mission department of Moore Theological College, now vice principal. They're here to talk about the changing face of world mission, the impact COVID is having on mission, but also just to debrief on what happened last week and how it all played out and the COVID impact and that. And so let's get straight to the pastor's heart. And how's your heart after the ups and downs of last week, Simon?
Well, my heart's greatly encouraged, Dominic. I didn't have to do too much planning, so it was a joy for me. And I was one of the blessed 100 who got to be there.
Yeah.
Which was, it's really something special. As you said, normally 3,000, this time just 100. Which was only the missionaries, the CMS staff, and I got in on the spouses program there because my wife works for CMS, and then the tech people who made the thing happen.
Yeah.
So I felt very blessed to be there, greatly encouraged by hearing what God is doing in his world.
Mm. And John, if we come to you, I mean, I imagine when they offered you the gig of general secretary and you said, okay, and you had kind of in your mind perhaps what your first missionary convention would be like, and
and it wasn't quite like that.
No.
I think it was a tremendous encouragement to get to the end of that conference and see the number of people who were just so keen to do everything they could for us to have a great week gathered around God's Word, hearing from our missionaries and really being challenged and inspired to be a part of what God's doing in the world. So very thankful, looking forward to some rest, but thankful.
Yeah, you're right, but I said, how are you feeling? Are you completely shattered today? Because I feel like I would be completely shattered after all of that. Yeah,
ready for some rest, but at the same time, I think the overwhelming feeling is one of thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're taking questions on Facebook. If you want to ask a question for Simon or John, you can do that. How was it different? Help us understand, how was it different? For you, from your point of view first, John.
Obviously, the biggest difference is that we didn't have an auditorium full of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a disappointment. The morning tea at summer school with thousands of people standing around, chatting, reconnecting with one another, looking forward to the year ahead, hearing from our missionaries face to face. That's a big part of summer school, and our youth and children's program as well. They were some of the reasons that we worked so hard to keep changing and adjusting to try and be able to gather on site. But when it became clear that that wasn't possible, we then did need to shift to, okay, what is the essence, the heart of this mission conference, and what's the best way to try and capture that in an online format?
Mm-hmm.
And so we did maintain a number of the different missionary sessions. There were some challenges with our missionaries serving in secure locations, so that particularly required some creativity.
How did you do that? How did you manage that?
It's
about hiding people's identity.
Yeah, that's right. And there are varying degrees of security, but for some of our workers, that meant you would not have heard their voices, nor would you have seen their faces, but you would have heard their stories. And so we had someone else stand in for them, for example, and read their stories of how God has been at work in their particular location.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were really keen and committed to have their stories told. For us, New South Wales ACT branch, one third of our missionaries are serving in secure locations, and we want to send more. Mm. And so we wanted to do whatever we could to ensure that that aspect of the conference was still included in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. How is the whole process of sending missionaries, the whole game of mission, changing in this with so many technology changes, the cost of sending a missionary versus online flexibility? Mm. Have you thought about those things, Simon?
Mm. Yeah, I think there's some big changes, some obvious changes. I think short-term mission, which particularly out of America has been the dominant form of mission,
mm-hmm.
for probably a couple of decades now, I think there's a big question mark over that.
Mm-hmm.
So the viability of short-term missions, of trips where you go spend a week and do something, if you've got a quarantine for 2 weeks either side of that, mm-hmm. obviously that's not going to work. But we've worked out other ways of communicating. And so perhaps those short-term teaching kinds of missions will be done in online ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I think technology has made us realise what's possible now, even in the developing world, with 3G internet kind of rolled out all across Africa and most of the world,
mm-hmm.
you can do maybe not the kind of Zoom calls that we'd love to, maybe not with the level of interactivity that we enjoy here, but you can get a video call going pretty much anywhere in the world now,
mm-hmm.
and that's amazing.
And so, and essentially free compared to, I don't know, $100,000 or something to send a family to part of the world. How do you weigh those things up?
Well, there are some things that you can do like that. There are other things that actually the technology just never replaces. And so particularly if you're going into a culture that is a high context culture where relationships are very highly valued, you actually need to be there and be there for a long time in order to be an effective communicator. And the relationship is more key than the content of what I say at any
mm-hmm.
particular time. So in that way, sending long-term missionaries is still going to be the main thrust of how the gospel goes to the nations.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that you can use technology for, and I think we've got to get better at working out what those ones are and where we do invest the $100,000 a year to put a warm body on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Take me down those two paths, John. Well, yeah, where can we see the future in technology, and where can we see where we've got to keep pushing here?
Sure. Without question, we've seen new initiatives and lots of creativity from our missionaries who are in very diverse locations around the world. Some of our lecturers in theological colleges, for example, are in contexts where there is no internet available for their students and the college is shut down,
mm-hmm.
full stop, and they need to wait out that period of isolation for
mm-hmm.
the college to start up again. But in a number of other locations, we've seen growing opportunities to connect and provide theological training. Mocklam would be one example. That's the Moore College PTC courses in Spanish.
And we were just talking about this, and you were telling me, Simon, that hearing Peter Scholl and the story of what's happened in the 12 years that he's been working in the Spanish-speaking world was one of your most encouraging moments of last week. Now, he's not here. Just give us that burst.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So over the 12 years that Pete was kind of pioneering and driving that work, the material had been translated, but there wasn't a plan for how to really roll it out in the whole of Latin America. They went to Mexico, but from Mexico, now 14 different countries throughout Latin America, and thousands of men and women have gone through that course because of the efforts that began with the Scholls, and now they've been joined by a growing team of other people, missionaries and locals, who are doing tremendous work in raising up a generation of pastors there. It's very exciting.
So deepening the theological kind of gristle of pastors in 14 countries?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about providing some theological gristle where there's none.
Right, okay.
Or where there's very, very little. So providing an opportunity for people to have solid biblical and theological training. And
which countries are we talking?
Some I may not mention, but if you imagine that you started in Mexico and worked your way around from there, there are some countries that are secure and others that are Mexico, Bolivia, Chile, Peru,
Argentina.
Yeah.
Spain.
And now across to Spain, Europe as well.
Wow, that's great.
It's very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. What about people putting themselves forward for mission? We've been talking here about a drought in people standing up, volunteering for full-time ministry, rector shortage, senior pastor shortage, not just in Sydney but across the Western world. Has that led to a drop as well in the number of candidates for mission?
No, it hasn't, I'm pleased to say. One of the joys of my job is meeting with those who have seen Margie Gillen first and often have been speaking with her for a number of years.
Well, without betraying any spousal confidentiality.
That's right.
But sorry.
After those initial conversations, at the point where we're thinking that Margie and I have been talking and thinking, okay, this particular couple or this individual is close to being ready to begin that application process, they'll meet with me and we'll agree, in most cases, but at that point, we'll agree to move forward with with an application. Mm-hmm. That is an absolute joy, meeting with those who are seriously considering and wrestling with that decision to accept the personal sacrifice to go and serve long-term, cross-culturally in gospel mission. And there hasn't been a decline in the last 12 months, which we give thanks to God for.
Mm. Have you got a thesis as to why that might be the case, Simon?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is there's going to be a lag. So by the time people are ready to be missionaries, they've had training. They've perhaps got some ministry experience. They're down the track a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that there's a dip coming, a dip that you experience in the local church first. But I think the other thing is that you're not talking about huge numbers of people, and God just mercifully seems to be raising up courageous, adventurous people to go and do bold things.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. He continues to do that. And I'm not sure that that's, you know, how closely that is tied to the people who are going into other ministries in other places.
Do bold things.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah, it's not for everybody to kind of uproot and move halfway around the world and learn another language, and that's a big ask. And the kinds of people who might be willing to go and do those things might not necessarily be appropriate to do other kinds of ministries, but vice versa. So that what I'm saying is I'm not sure that the two groups are a completely overlapping set.
Mm-hmm.
And the set that want to go out and do mission seem to be keeping on bubbling up.
Mm. I'm just looking at our Facebook feed here, and there's a question from Elizabeth George. How is the Church Missionary Society supporting missionaries with mental health issues which could be triggered by isolation? I'm guessing that some of those missionaries out on the field have had an even more difficult time navigating COVID than some of us here. And whether you're, I mean, we've got people watching in the UK, in the United States, in those kind of places, but even in Australia, where it actually hasn't been that difficult.
Mm. No, that's a great question. And our missionaries on location under normal circumstances would be visited once each year, roughly, by their regional mission director, who works with CMS Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Those visits have not been possible for most of the last 12 months. So in place of those, there's been a lot of work with offering online support and virtual pastoral visits, if you like. Of course, there's an awareness that it's not the same. It's not the same as sitting and speaking to someone, reading the scriptures, praying with someone face to face. But all of our missionaries work hard and are trained before they go in developing their own pastoral care plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's a requirement for all of our missionaries, And it really is one of the ways that we train and equip our long-term workers to be deliberate in thinking about their own self-care, their own spiritual nourishment and refreshment. And of course, CMS as an organisation take steps to support and encourage our workers as well. So it's a combination of different steps that are taken. And us in the branch, we have pastoral care staff who work closely in providing that refreshment and support for our missionaries when they're back in Australia.
One of the things I like about you guys is the way you say no to people about going on in the... I sometimes meet people, they ask, will our church support them through another mission organisation? And when you sit down and talk with them, I discover that they originally wanted to go with you guys and you had said no. And I think, oh, I think they were right. How do you go about being tough love there?
I talked about one of the things I love about my job, meeting with inquirers and candidates. Without question, one of the hardest things that I've found in the last 12 months is saying no.
Mm-hmm.
But I have needed to do that. But that's not a decision that I arrive at on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the great things about the application process that CMS have, which is known to be very rigorous,
mm-hmm.
and we don't apologise for that. But one of the great things about it is we seek to involve a wide range of people in that process. We will mm-hmm. always want to hear from the pastor, the senior minister who that candidate has served under. Mm-hmm. We will want to hear from other mature, wise Christian men and women who have observed that person serving in ministry. And we take very seriously their comments and feedback as referees,
mm-hmm.
As well as the other work that we do. And so when, I mean, my hope is we do arrive at a point in saying, actually, under God, we do not think this is the right way forward for you. My hope, and often this is the case, the candidate, the individual, the couple have actually come to grow in their understanding of why that actually may be true for them. That it under God, it may not be a wise decision. And that's the outcome I'm praying for. It's not always where things land, but it often is.
Mm. Yeah. Then you actually can pastorally serve them in the conversation.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right.
And they can go on to all kinds of other fruitful ministries and joyfully so, knowing they've knocked on the door, but actually maybe this other thing is a better fit for them and they can glorify the Lord Jesus in another kind of way. So it's not a... Yeah, I think some people might be very discouraged. But as I said before, being a missionary is a particular kind of thing. It's just one kind of thing. Not everybody's suited for it. And if you're not, you're better off to thrive where you can.
Yeah,
John. I was just going to add a great encouragement. You're not the only one who thinks it's a good thing that we say no.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the common questions we ask candidates as they come to us, why are you talking to CMS? On more than one occasion, they have said to me, because you guys say no.
It'll help give me the guidance as to whether or not I'm up for it.
That's right. Part of the application process for many of our candidates is actually a process of discernment together, prayerfully, seeking the Lord's will.
And I actually think sometimes we as evangelicalism are a little weak in that area, in that sometimes we ought to say to some people, I don't think this is the right thing for you. And we avoid that hard conversation. Yeah.
It's never loving to avoid the hard conversation, is it?
I think it's a tribal weakness of ours. Yeah. Now, culture wars. It feels like there's increasing tension and culture wars going on in the world at the moment. The idea of foreigners coming in to teach others how to do religion properly, is that causing increasing tension, risk for missionaries?
The number one thing that makes you an effective cross-cultural missionary is humility.
Mm-hmm.
Humility is, even if you're just talking about cross-cultural communication, humility is the number one predictor of whether somebody's going to be any good or not. Our problem with Western missionaries, particularly going into the developing world, is where there's a lack of humility.
Mm-hmm.
And people will sniff that out a mile away, and that's something that we've got to repent of. So if we think we're going out to save the world, we've got the wrong job. We're taking on Jesus' job. That's been a problem historically. And I think people respond really well to humble missionaries who want to serve local churches. It's, again, it's another missiological kind of unique thing about CMS is that CMS always looks to serve under local leadership. So rather than going and setting up our own thing, sending a team which is going to be the team that goes and fixes everything in somebody else's country, CMS intentionally seeks to serve under local leadership. I think that's the key, particularly in those environments of cultural animosity. So I worked in Southern Africa for 8 years. Under the shadow of apartheid, that's exactly what that's like.
More? Just fill that in for me. How was it like that? Yeah.
You turn up as a white person and the assumption is that you're racist, that you look down on the majority of the black population in Southern Africa. And it's only as you get to know people, as you are genuine with them, that you can push past that. Mm-hmm. If you go there and you don't submit to local leadership but instead try to impose something, then that will certainly not be welcomed.
Mm. John, as you look around the world at the moment, and obviously you do this in your role, where are the places of greatest spiritual need, of gospel poor, of greatest gospel poor at the moment? And you're thinking, oh, we've got to get to that space, you know?
Yeah, I'm told our friends at CMS Australia who focus on those relationships out to the rest of the world and those local partners in various locations, they receive requests every week to send long-term missionaries who will support their efforts. Europe, now I served for 10 years in Europe, so I'm more familiar with that part of the world. It is a tough place. Mm-hmm. It is gospel poor. Mm. We heard at summer school from workers from France, for example, and it is a tough place to do ministry. It is a gospel poor region in need of long-term workers who will do that patient perseverance that's required over the long term to engage with locals and share the good news with them. But there are so many other places. We have workers serving in the Middle East. We have growing numbers in Asia and Southeast Asia. Mm. We don't talk much about those places, but they are gospel poor. And separate from that, there are huge opportunities to support the training of church leaders in locations where the church may be growing rapidly, but there's not the depth of teaching available for church pastors and leaders.
So there are different kinds of gospel poverty. The poverty of Europe is not ignorance per se. They see themselves often as post-Christian. There's a real animosity there. That's a different setup to the Middle East or South Asia. But different again to those places where the gospel's been going gangbusters, sub-Saharan Africa. How do you train enough pastors to keep up with 9,000 new Christians every day? How do you do that on a continent?
I heard some numbers. While we're speaking about numbers, just I was listening to some of the online content from some of our missionaries. There's a family preparing to go to Kenya. The Kenyan Anglican Church, and there are other evangelical Protestant churches in Kenya, but the Anglican Church in Kenya is growing by 100,000 new believers each year, and they are crying out for support to train pastors and teachers. Now, it's a different type of gospel poor, but we are being invited to be a part of what the Lord is doing in that place.
And I think one of the things that we've got to do in terms of, mission is from everywhere to everywhere. The Lord is sending his children everywhere, but not for the same reasons. So why might an Australian be sent? And where might we go to? Where should we think about serving? And thinking about the different gospel needs in different places, some of us are going to be better suited to be bold evangelists in a Muslim world, or to be bold evangelists in a secular world, or to be theological educators in a place where people love the Lord Jesus but don't know how to read the Bible yet. they're all different kinds of needs. And so I think in our enthusiasm to be on board with Global Mission, we should look at that breadth of possibilities. So where might God use me? I think that's a great question to be asking.
Now, one of my mates who was at the conference last week said to me, I told him you guys were coming in, and he said, Simon gave a great challenge in his session to two different sorts of people about who should be putting their hand up to go. And you should get him to kind of scratch the itch there. So what did you say that's so...
Well, it comes back to what I was saying about humility before. So if you think that you are exactly the person that God needs to send and God needs you to go to this place and you're going to be the answer to all their problems, don't go and talk to Margie. Margie's the one raising up missionaries. Come and talk to me. I'll set you straight about that bit. But if you're not sure, if you think maybe you could be used, if you think you might have as much to learn from others as you have to teach them, then you're exactly the right kind of person. It's the 2 Corinthians 4 jars of clay thing.
If you recognise I'm a jar of clay.
If you recognise you're a jar of clay, you can be useful. If you think you're the answer, please don't go. Come and have a conversation with me. That'll be a short conversation. If you're a jar of clay and you know it, have a conversation with John or Margie. That'll be a long conversation.
Right. Okay. Okay, good. Now, just as I watch the your big conference in the Blue Mountains, I mean, it was, having gone for, I don't know, 15 years or something, it's been full the last few years. And as a church pastor, I'd be thinking, I don't know, do I start another service? Do I move to a bigger building? And, well, anyway, you didn't have it full this year. What are you going to do next year?
Technically, it was full.
Oh, that's right, you had 100.
That's right.
So if you're watching in the rest of the world, we've got a limit of gatherings of 100 people in New South Wales at the moment.
Yeah. It's a great question, and to be honest, it's a question I'm looking forward to exploring.
Right.
With our staff, with the fellowship. So we encouraged everyone to send in some feedback to us on how they found the conference. How was it engaging online, watching missionary sessions online? Children and youth, I think, was probably much harder to engage. We provided a range of resources, and the directors and speakers worked incredibly hard in a short period of time to have all those resources available. But I suspect it's much harder for high schoolers and primary schoolers to engage online in the same way. But yes, we have some work to do in doing that evaluation and listening to people's feedback and thinking through what should we be planning for next year.
I mean, I've just been thinking, with big organisations, there's risk management, there's not wanting to make too many changes because you don't know, the implications are big and you could lose what you've got. And yet here is a moment to change things that could lead to significant growth. It feels like to me, watching from a distance. Yeah,
there, we had, I think by the end of the week, nearly, it was 800 roughly connected on Facebook, which is only a proportion of the fellowship and those people connected. But some of the photos coming through, one which warmed my heart, was one of our ARV retirement villages in Castle Hill. They had to run 2 separate sessions for viewing because of the restrictions for how many they could have in the room. So they had 60 people wanting to watch the live stream of summer school. I'm quite sure a number of those people would never make it up the mountain on a normal year.
Yeah.
But this year, there were 60 of them, so many that with the size of the room and the restrictions, they had to have 2 different sessions for them to view it. Fantastic.
I think you could say at this point, you won't go back to physical only next time.
There were jokes made towards the end of the conference. I've been saying to people, I think what you can expect is it won't look like last week, nor will it look like the
last
year before.
Year.
How's that? I'll land somewhere between those two.
What do you think, Simon? Yeah,
I think there were some great wins. So we often kind of grieve the things we lose, and I love a big crowd. I'm an extrovert. Love it. But some of the wins were at a normal summer school, most mornings there's 5 missionary sessions that run at the same time. And I only get to go to one. So I miss out on 4.
And I have to sit on the floor and there are ants in my trousers.
Yeah, that's right. And it's raining in the puddles. But a lot of the times I'd love to go to all of them. The thing about putting them online is I can. So I can chew through those resources, apart from the secure guys, I can chew through those resources and catch up on a lot more input than otherwise. That's a win. That's a win.
John.
I think that's right. That's definitely one of the areas that people appreciated. I think, without question, there were a number of people who were able to engage with more of our missionaries during the week. We do have to wrestle with some of the costs as well, though. So for our secure workers, it's not the same having someone else there engaged.
Reading their script or whatever.
For families with children, Summer School is a family conference. Our youth and children's program normally has well over 1,500 children. We have hundreds of leaders. And so we've got to wrestle with these things and think, are there ways to keep some of the wins that we saw last week, but
preserve some of the things you loved about the year before.
That's right. Yeah. That's a challenge.
Some of the things about the youth and children's thing are a little to the side, but actually wonderfully kingdom-minded too. So the number of people who lead on a children's and youth session at CMS Summer School and then end up at college and then later end up on the mission field themselves because they've had that long-term connection and engagement, you don't want to miss that. So there are things about being together with people and sharing stories together that produce much more than just what happens in the week as well. And I think particularly around the youth and children's program and around the leaders of those programs, that is a big loss.
As you talk about youth and children's programs, I'll just read to you a little text that I wrote to a young man, Hugh Chilton, who was one of your youth and children's speakers a couple of years ago. He said, "Hey Hugh, this is me writing. Hey Hugh, I don't think we've ever met, but just to encourage you in ministry, my 13-year-old boy Solomon has been saying to people recently when he's asked how he became a Christian, he points to a series of talks that you gave to youth at the CMS Summer School last year. I thought you'd be encouraged at the way God has used your words by his spirit to impact my son, and I'm certainly thankful to him and to you, Dominic."
Absolutely.
I'm just resonating with that.
I mean, my daughter came to me, this is many years ago, came to me when she was only 10 years old. She came back from a children's session at summer school and said to me, "Hey, Dad, there's lots of reasons people can't be missionaries. Some of them have health problems. Some of them need to stay home, look after their family. Some people can't travel." And she listed this whole list of reasons why people couldn't be missionaries. She said, "Dad, we haven't got any of those reasons, do we?" And we ended up going to Africa.
Mission field. Isn't that great?
I'd comment on that too, in that summer school is one of those conferences where we recruit, through the work of the Holy Spirit, we recruit a number of new candidates who offer for missionary service. That was our family's experience. We had a job lined up here in Sydney and everything was quite settled when we came to summer school for another year, and the Lord changed our direction. That's yet to be tested this year. How busy will Margie and I be with
as a result?
There were plenty of challenges put out. There were some great challenges, but is it the same as that bumping shoulders and talking those
and
incidental
that's a key
conversations?
Metric, a key metric. Hey, thanks very much for coming in. It's been great to have you with us, John Lovell, Simon Gillam. John Lovell, of course, the new General Secretary of the Church Missionary Society for New South Wales, and Simon Gillam, Vice Principal of Moore Theological College here in Sydney. You've been with us on The Pastor's Heart, and we'll look forward to your company next week when our guests will be Richard Condy, the Bishop of Tasmania, Kanishka Raphael, the Dean of Sydney, and Jennifer Hercott, and we'll be talking about the Anglican Church and where to next. Thanks for being with us. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.